Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Department of Civility here at Car Talk Plaza. Yeah. Read the letter, will you, you jerk?
Well, it's more than civility, actually. This is from Tom Burke. B-O-U-R-Q-U-E.
Bork, I would say.
Bork.
Yeah.
Dear Hoosits.
Rhymes with jork.
Dear Hoosits, I've just read a bunch of letters sent to you guys, and I noticed that almost without exception, the letter writers insulted you. He noticed that. I think that is mighty rude of them, so I'd like to address a few words to those mean-spirited letter writers. Dear mean-spirited letter writers, just because it's true, do you tell your spouse that he or she is fat and ugly? Just because it's true, do you tell your boss that he's a moron? Just because it's true, do you look at yourself in the mirror and say you must be the most pathetic, worthless human being on the planet? Of course not.
Right.
So why pick on Tom and Ray?
Right.
Right. Just because they are in no position to poison your pancakes, downsize your job out of existence, or force you to commit suicide is no reason to be rude to these ridiculous idiots. Backhanded here. They deserve to be treated with the same silent contempt as judges and police officers. Save your cruel remarks for those who asked for it. Politicians. Tom and Ray may be stupid and obnoxious, but that is no reason to throw it in their faces. How about a little civility? There, I feel better.
Well, that's very kind words.
Thank you, Tom. You're a sweet, sweet man.
Yes, and compassionate and understanding and empathetic.
And a real jerk.
Well, look,
let me get that part again. Get this. Tom and Ray may be stupid and obnoxious.
He didn't say are. Maybe.
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 That's the best we've ever gotten.
Maybe.
You which may obviously be a moron.
Well, it introduces an element of doubt. I feel honored.
That's and like the review we got.
I feel warm and fuzzy now.
Our little bluegrass band played at a benefit one time. And we're not the most accomplished musicians. But
no, we're not.
We're not. But the review we got in the newspaper was that we, quote, weren't half bad. We were thrilled. We thought we were all bad.
I framed that. I have it up on my wall.
So do I.
Not half bad.
Not half bad. He called me up right away. Did you read that?
So I think we have made great strides in the last few years. At least we all start at the same time. And we end at the same time. What goes on in the middle is still up for grabs, but you have to take one step at a time.
You've got to take one step at a time. Yeah.
And if you have a question about your car, we'll take one step at a time in trying to solve it. Our number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Roseanne. I'm in San Francisco.
Hi,
Roseanne.
A at the end.
Rosanna.
Rosanna,
Rosanna, Dana.
Exactly.
Excellent. From where? San Francisco?
San Francisco, California.
Yeah.
What's going on?
You got a car?
You know what? I have my friend's car for the summer.
You burn the clutch out?
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
No, it's an automatic.
It is.
It's a 97 or 98 Subaru Outback Sport.
Yeah.
And I was driving back from work the other day, and I heard a kind of ringing noise coming from under the car.
Yeah.
I noticed a man in a... Yeah, I noticed
oh,
a man
maybe
in
you
a
ran over
cart.
A cell phone user.
I noticed a man in a shopping cart rolling toward me, and I thought, oh, that's making the noise. But then about a mile later, it was still there.
Yeah.
So that wasn't it. It stops whenever I stop the car at a stop sign or a stoplight. It stops when I make turns. But once I straighten the car back out again, I hear the ringing. It's almost like a metal sound dragging on the ground.
But you have to be moving pretty much or revving up the engine a little bit to hear it?
Moving. Yeah.
Moving.
Have you tried just revving up the engine without moving? For example, leaving it in park or neutral?
I didn't try that.
I didn't think so.
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
I'm not very good at diagnostics.
Yeah. Well, that'll mean we'll have to give you two answers.
Okay.
One for moving and one for revving.
Okay.
Real, I'm prepared with only one answer.
No, you're not.
I am? I'm not?
Oh, all right. Well,
you
sure.
Give your answer, and I'll give my answer.
Yeah.
And you'll obviously give the other one.
Yeah.
I mean, you may have two answers.
I have two.
I mean, you may have two more.
Oh, I
because
may.
One of yours may not be mine.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be interesting? Then we'd have three, wouldn't we?
There you go. Well, my answer is that you have a loose heat shield. And what you're hearing is the little sheet metal of the heat shield rattling, and it's a benign little noise.
And where is the heat shield located?
The heat shield on this car.
It's on the outside of the re-entry rockets.
Right.
You had me writing that down.
We knew that. So the heat shield is everywhere. The heat shield runs from stem to stern on the exhaust system on this car.
Okay.
It starts virtually at the engine, and there are heat shields wrapped around the front exhaust pipe and the intermediate pipe and the catalytic converter and the tailpipe, you name it. There's a heat shield, and it could be any one of those heat shields that's come loose and is making this annoying little noise.
And that's 99% probably right
answer. And you can corroborate that by sitting there with the car in neutral or park and revving up the engine, and you will get the noise without actually being in motion.
I will get the noise.
I think so.
Okay.
But now my brother's prepared to give you six or seven other answers.
That was my first answer. And the second one is, if in fact you rev it up and you can't get the noise unless you really are moving, then that probably isn't it.
Okay.
Then you might have a little, I don't know, a backing plate that's bent and maybe a rotor is just barely touching it.
Or you could have a pebble stuck in there. You haven't been to Pebble Beach or anything like that, have you?
No, haven't been out there recently.
Yeah, but I don't think so. I think that you can get the noise even when you're not moving and that it's going to be the heat shield.
So when are you returning this car?
At the end of the week.
End of the week.
Oh, good. The sooner the better, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. There was a little bit of...
I wouldn't even mention it.
Oh, you have to. You have to give whoever you borrowed it from a full report.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, really?
I agree.
Here's why I wouldn't say anything. Because how long... You've had the car all summer?
Yep.
The person who was stupid enough to let you drive his car or her car is going to get in the car, and not having driven it for 3 months or so, is going to hear five other noises, which he's going to blame you for. So why add another one? If you say, it makes this little tinkle, tinkle noise, he's going to say, yeah, well, what about the thunking noise when you hit a bump? What about the noise I hear when I take a left turn?
What about the rose bush that's stuck to the left front
fender? It didn't make any of those noises when I gave you the car. And you're going to end up paying for a transmission, CV joints, wheel bearings.
Oh, here's what you do. Arrange to be out of town when he returns.
Oh, smart.
Right?
Unavailable.
Give him 3 or 4 days to sort things out, and you have to be incommunicado. You have to be someplace.
Okay.
You disappear. Can't be found. Where's Rosanna? Don't know.
You know what's good, too?
Out of town.
Return it on a day when you're having storms.
Oh,
rain and thunder, especially loud thunder.
And hope that he crashes it on the way.
I was thinking of leaving the radio volume up really loud.
We try that at the shop all the time.
That doesn't work.
Yeah. But get the heat shield looked at if you want to get rid of this. If this is the only thing, take it to a gas station. And if they can duplicate the noise, they can probably tighten it up or put a little weld on it.
Okay.
Yeah, chewing gum works.
Yeah, that too.
For a day.
I was going to say duct tape, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
See you, Rosanna.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See, if they had high temperature chewing gum, that would work.
We have that. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Jose from Baton Rouge.
Hi, Jose from Baton Rouge. What's going on?
About a couple of weeks ago, I'm driving a green Dodge Caravan 95, and I woke up and it had a flat tire on it. So I got out the jack, I put everything into its place, and I started to change the tire. Halfway through, I decided to put the spare under the car just in case, heaven forbid, the jack, you know, would break. That's the way my dad taught me.
That's an invitation to a disaster.
Well, it was like a prophecy of disaster that day.
Yeah.
Because...
So you put the spare, underneath the wheel that you had just taken the bad tire off?
He was about to take the tire off.
Actually, I did both. First, I put the spare under the car.
Yeah.
And then when I took the tire off, the flat...
You swapped them.
Yeah, I swapped them.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, almost.
Maybe.
Soon to be... We'll see
I
that.
Put it below underneath the car, right below the front driver's side door, because that's sort of near where I put the jack. I figured if anything happened, that would support the weight.
So you, this was a front tire with it, where you had the flat.
Yeah, that's right.
Front. So this tire, this tire now is behind the front wheel.
Exactly.
Got it.
Well, and I didn't even touch it, and the jack made this horrible creaking noise.
Oh.
And I thought, well, maybe I just should get, you know, give it a little nudge or something, just to make sure you know. And suddenly, boom. You know, the thing just slipped, and the car went down. And it hit the tire, and I watched the disc brake, and it actually hit the ground as well.
Yeah.
Those discs are tough.
They are.
Oh.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because, you know, I don't want to be driving out and all of a sudden hear another creaking noise and have my left wheel fly off. But I don't want to take it to a car dealership. Tell them the story,
God
and then, you know, see their eyes shine and dollar sign and say, oh, yeah, we have to change the whole thing.
Yeah. Better you should die in a fiery crash.
At least it'll be quick.
Well, it's amazing the lengths that people will go to avoid going to a dealership. This guy would rather die in a fiery crash.
Well, no, he wouldn't. That's why he's calling us. Jose called us.
Talk about a reassurance.
I'm trying to secure my life here.
But he's calling us? I mean, he could still die in a fiery crash. He's going to take our word for it?
He's going to take
Jose, what are you thinking?
He's going to take our word for it.
He is, I know.
I'll
tell you a story, Jose.
Okay.
I once drove a Triumph TR250, a little sports car.
My dad had a Triumph.
It was a great little car. And one time, I personally was responsible for forgetting to tighten up the lug nuts when I had been doing something. I think I put new pads in it.
That was the last day we allowed him to work at the garage.
And I neglected to tighten the lug nuts. And that night, I was driving down one of the major highways here around Boston.
For those concerned customers, that was the last day Tony worked at the garage.
Yeah, it was the last day. And as I'm driving along, interestingly, I'm doing about 60 miles an hour. This is a road that goes in two directions. There's no barrier or center strip between the lanes going.
A yellow line separating you from a fiery crash.
From other guys doing 60 miles an hour going in the opposite direction.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, one by one, unknown to me, one by one, the lug nuts had been falling off. There were four or five of them. I don't remember.
Well, none when you were done.
And all of a sudden, the last one fell off. I was not aware of any of this. And the only thing that made me aware of it was suddenly the wheel fell off.
Oh, my God.
I mean, no sign whatsoever, no noise, no shaking. It was magnificent.
Well, at least no shaking that you could discern from the other shakes
from the other
and
shakes.
Noises that the car made.
The wheel falls off, and naturally now the same thing happens that happened to you, except I'm doing 60 miles an hour. The spark display was magnificent. Because now I'm driving on three rubber wheels and one disc. And I managed somehow to not crash into the oncoming traffic. I managed to pull over to the side and
the
pull.
Witch's ex-wife says, shucks, better luck next time.
For my luck, there's a gas station there. And I pull into the gas station, sparks flying everywhere. Everyone comes running out and I say, fill it up and check the oil.
a true story.
A true story.
A true story.
And I mean, it was dark. It was late at night. And I left the car there. The next day, I went back. I found the wheel in the middle of the road. And I found all the lug nuts.
Yeah, and it was a great demonstration. It was a great demonstration of how Darwinism fails sometimes.
Darwinism doesn't always work. That's right. And I just I jacked it up. I put the wheel back on, tightened up the same old lug nuts, and drove around for the next 5 years on the same car.
No disc problems or anything.
No, you're not going to have any disc problems
no.
either, because what happened when the car fell, indeed the disc did hit the pavement, but because there's a spring attached to the McPherson strut, you compressed the spring.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, right. and don't forget the vehicle only weighs a couple of thousand pounds, so you know, there wasn't that much force being applied to that disc, and it's designed to take a lot more punishment than that. I mean, it's not something I'd recommend you do every week, but you did nothing to put your life in
well,
jeopardy.
Well, I should say, unless there was already something wrong, and it wouldn't hurt to have someone take a look at the tie rod ends and the ball joints on both sides. Because if you had one that was very weak, you may have gone that last eighth of an inch to make it fail.
I wouldn't worry about
it. I would have someone just take a peek. Don't tell them anything about
Jose, who
are
you going to listen to? The guy whose wheel nuts fell off at 60 or the guy whose nuts didn't fall off? Come on.
I beg your pardon.
I wouldn't worry about thyroid ends. I mean, it would be nice to have them checked as a matter of course.
Okay.
The next time you're in for something, you just might want to casually mention it.
Better safe
without
than sorry.
Any fanfare or melodrama.
Absolutely.
It'll be an invitation for overspending.
That's what I was wondering.
So I would downplay it, say, oh, it happens all the time. Oh, yeah, it fell off the jack again. But don't worry, you didn't do any damage to it or anything else in all likelihood.
Yeah, and you're lucky that the car didn't fall on top of you. And you have good luck. You know that the forces of nature are with you. Your chi is working fine.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
See you. Bye-bye. Hey, it's time to take a short break.
This is where we allow our stations to identify themselves.
No, this is where we allow our stations to check the programming menu again and see if there's anything better they can put on in this slot. We'll be back in a minute. We hope.
I made up my mind. I'm gone. Go this time in my Geo Metro. So here we go. With the price of gas, $10 kind of fills up fast in my Geo Metro. Maybe take your ride through the sky, my Geo Metro. So here we go.
And even though the ACLU wonders if this whole free speech thing is really such a hot idea whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and some much-needed research.
This is a very, very short letter here, but you know how some things just get
just
you?
Get you.
I mean, the thing is that it's all anticlimactic because the whole key comes in the first sentence, and I'm going to just give it to you, and you are gonna say, my God! Dear CNC, it has been my observation over the years that if you take a carburetor or a Volkswagen engine apart and put it together enough times, you will eventually have two of them.
Get it?
Isn't it the truth?
You'll have enough pieces left over. To make another whole one. Usually you're short just one little piece.
One little piece, but you go get a rebuild kit, and you got the second one all done. I mean, what a brilliant observation. I'm sure that you have observed the same phenomenon.
Oh, getting...
Who is this, by the way? Dave Taylor. I don't know where Dave is from. It came by email. Since you must spend several hours a day in the library reading all available automotive literature, you should be able to answer my questions. One, is there anything in the literature which corroborates my empirical observation? And two, if so, are there statistics which address the question of how many times various automotive parts, for example, a carburetor, an automatic transmission, etc., must be disassembled and reassembled before there are enough parts to make the two of them? This has been a concern of mine for quite some time. Thanks, Dave Taylor.
Well, I know. In my little junk drawers in my toolbox, I have enough pieces.
To make two cars.
Oh. Exactly. Whole fleet of cars. That's just missing the crankshafts, I think. It is true. You take it apart enough.
Take a carburetor apart and put it together enough times, you will eventually have two of them. Well, that's a classic. A classic.
It sure is. Well, if you've got any automotive observations you'd like to share, or if you just have a question you'd like us to try to answer, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Bob from Maryland.
Bob from Maryland.
What's going on, Bob?
Hey, I've got a wonderful 95 Windstar, and we were heading up from Mount Rainier, Maryland, up to Allentown, Pennsylvania for the family reunion, and the speedometer, all of a sudden the needle on the dial starts shooting back and forth, and I'm going about 60, and it's showing 80 and then 100 and so on. So I pull over for a second, and I'm checking the fluids, and, you know, nothing's wrong. So I head up back down the road, and I can hear a little whirring sound. So I say, okay, speedometer cable's probably broken, and I ignore it. And after a while, and we've been going for about 2 hours here, then the engine starts to stumble and kind of hesitate. I'm going 65, and I try to go faster, and it starts to stumble.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, okay, well, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So when we get back from the weekend.
And what was your answer? When you said, what's going on here?
No. Maybe I need higher octane. I don't know.
And during this misbehavior, the check engine light didn't come on?
It did come on.
Of course it did. And you were going to leave that out of your little story now, weren't you?
Yeah, to see if we were on our toes.
You're right. The light came on and pretty much stayed on.
Yeah.
Okay. Took it to my mechanic when he got back, and he was pretty much stumped. He gave it a major tune-up.
Oh.
He's stumped. He said, well, I can't put a mechanic in your car for 4 hours to drive around and see what it is.
Oh, he doesn't have to.
Why? I mean, doesn't it still do it?
It only does it at high speeds. After, like, a couple hours?
Well, I suspect what's happening is that you have a faulty VSS, which is a vehicle speed sensor, which is the thing that tells... You don't have a speedometer cable, by the way. Don't ask him to replace that because he won't find one.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know why it was making the noise, but I know why the thing was misbehaving, because your VSS was going out of range and sending wacko signals to the speedo and to the computer. And that's why the engine started to misbehave, because it was the engine was traveling at a speed, you know what, like for 55 miles per hour, but it was being told that you were doing 90. So it was changing the fuel injection, it was changing the timing, and it was making the engine run peculiarly for that reason, and it set the light. When the thing cooled off, it returned to normal operation, and that's why the light doesn't come on unless you drive it on the highway. So he needs to, I would say, just throw a vehicle speed sensor in it. That's going to fix it.
Okay.
Yeah, and the thing might be working at low speeds.
It is working at low speed, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, when's the next family reunion? I mean, you might be all right for a year or so.
Yeah, I am, and my mother-in-law will be happy as can be.
Yeah. There you go. He won't be coming to visit. Good luck, Bob. But have him, if he can't figure out anything, have him replace that
vehicle
speed sensor.
Remember those words, vehicle speed sensor.
Okay, vehicle speed sensor. Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. See you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Heather.
Hi, Heather. Aren't we? What's the word?
Perky.
What?
Where are you from?
You are perky.
I am.
Well, yeah.
Well, I'm from Maine.
But that explains it.
I don't think so. People in Maine aren't perky.
I wouldn't call people in Maine perky.
No. I live in Washington.
D.C.?
No, state.
The state.
And I think that's kind of infecting me.
So that's where you are now.
I am, but I want to drive home.
You do? So why?
Well, my parents are there, and they're complaining.
Oh, you're just like a visit.
Yeah.
How long have you been apart from them?
2 years.
You haven't been home at all for 2 years?
Only for 2 days.
You ingrate.
That's what they said.
Don't you realize everything they've done for you?
Everything.
Have you no appreciation? You're going to let them just wither on the vine?
Stop, I'm going to cry. Oh, gosh. But my car's sick, and I don't know if I can drive it home.
Oh, they'll send you a plane ticket. They're dying to see you anyway. You ought to be able to get a plane ticket out of them.
Well, right.
Anyway, what's wrong with your car?
Okay, it's an 85 Subaru, four-wheel drive, automatic.
How many miles?
A lot, like 180 or something.
We're going to start using lunar units.
Yeah, how many trips to the moon?
Yeah, this is
0.8 lunars.
Yeah, I was at 0.75. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Well, that's good because, I mean, in the old days, you never could do that.
No. Heck no.
No. This is good. Okay, you're at...
0.75L.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll tell them that at the DMV.
Yeah.
And when I pull in and turn it off, it...
keeps running.
It, yeah, it goes...
That's it. I love it.
My tongue ring got in the way.
Can we hear that one more time? Because I'm not so sure everyone heard it.
And then it just fades.
They all do that.
Is there like a cymbal crash at the end?
It's kind of scary, really, because it seems like it doesn't want to die. And my last car went up in flames. So I'm really concerned about this.
Well,
has it done this for a long time?
It seems like it's getting progressively worse, but it seems like it started about a month ago.
A month ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think you have a what's called a good old-fashioned case of dieseling.
Oh, somebody else said that word, too.
Yeah, the engine is running so hot and so fast that when you turn the key off, you are still sucking gas and air. The hot pistons aren't quite hot enough to ignite the gas in the same fashion that the spark plugs would, but enough to make it run. So it's...
Hey, you did that better than I did.
And yeah, he got the same car.
And if you're really lucky, the engine in its last throes, so to speak, can run backwards even.
Yes.
Because the piston, that last piston, doesn't have enough momentum to compress that mixture of gas and air completely and get to the top of the stroke, but it'll explode the stuff, and it'll push and turn the crankshaft the other way. And then stuff will shoot up through the carburetor for a fiery finish. And yes, you can set the thing on fire.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Really?
And yeah. The question is, should you drive this car across the entire northern United States?
Well, as long as you don't shut it off, you'll be all right.
Well, would this contribute to when I put it in reverse, it goes ka-thunk?
No, that's
a separate issue.
Yeah,
it doesn't like to shift when it's cold.
If you put it in drive, it doesn't shift up by itself.
Yeah, it won't start in first. I have to put it into first.
Well, let's get right first of all to the most serious issue here.
Wait
a minute now, before you get too nervous, I think we want you to know.
Uh-oh.
That it's very likely, if you were to make it to Maine with this car, you'd never be able to come back to Washington.
Yeah.
Well, I like Maine.
I mean,
how do you like Minnesota?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to make it. You have like a job in Washington?
I go to school.
So you need to
How do you like Indiana University?
Yeah. No way.
So you need to get back no matter what.
No, you can't go.
Oh.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't want to be driving across the entire country. I mean, it used to take people 7 months to do this with the covered wagons. It could take you 7 months.
Oh, God.
And you wish you were in a covered wagon. You should be so lucky to have a covered wagon.
I mean, with 180,000 miles on this thing, you've already gone 80,000 miles more than they ever expected it to last. So you're really on borrowed time. And the dieseling I'm not worried about, but the transmission.
I'm worried about the clunk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, the clunk could mean CV joints. It could mean transmission and...
Yeah, well, it could mean...
stuff that could break in the middle of nowhere.
Here's what you have to do.
And just never go
to
again.
To satisfy everyone, including your parents, I think before you head off on this trip, you need to go and get the thing really checked out.
Okay.
To find out all the stuff that it needs, especially the safety-related stuff.
Uh-oh.
And what it's going to cost you to fix all this stuff, and you may decide to stay there in Washington, and they'll come and visit you.
I'd like them to. It'd make life so much easier because then
I can
send them home.
Yeah, why won't they visit you?
Yeah, what kind of a Subaru do they have?
Well, they don't.
Do they have a car?
Yeah.
Maybe theirs is in better shape.
It is.
Of course it is. Call them up and say, no way.
You know what? We'll talk them into it.
Right.
give us the number right now, actually.
Oh, my God. They'd kill me.
Give us the number right now. We'll make sure that the rest of America doesn't hear it. Go ahead. What's the number? Okay. We'll call them up and we'll talk to them.
Oh, my God.
Don't go away. You started it.
You're doing this to me.
Hang on.
Hold on.
They're calling my mother. She's going to kill me. I'm crying. I'm laughing.
Don't worry. We're going to make everything right. Don't be nervous. What's Dad do for a living?
He's a gunsmith.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so he has his own shop?
He's a partner in it.
And what are their names?
Mary and Robert.
How's your gun shop?
Hi. Can we speak to Robert, please?
Hang on, please.
Thanks. Oh, yeah. Shh. Be quiet, Heather.
Yes, can I help you?
Hey, Robert?
Yeah.
Hi. We're actually on the radio. And this is Tom and Ray Malyazzi from Car Talk. I mean, you may have heard of us.
We've been talking to your daughter, Heather.
Oh, okay.
She says that you and your wife, I guess, are trying to get her to come and visit you all in Maine. And she had some questions about the condition of her Subaru.
She didn't know if her Subaru could make it or not. So we told her that we'd call you and see if we could talk you into buying her a new car.
Yeah, there's two chances of that. Slim and none.
Yeah, she had her eye on a Lexus, but we talked her down to a Toyota Corolla.
Well, I mean, I guess her car really isn't going to make it because her car is in trouble. So we told her that maybe you guys could go visit her.
Well, unfortunately, it wouldn't be until after hunting season.
Of course, because...
Of course not.
Yeah.
She would understand that. But then it would be winter.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to be driving through the snows of all the North Dakota.
You couldn't do that. You'd have to wait till spring.
Then you have to wait till spring. Yeah. See, I guess Heather doesn't really think you want her to come and visit. Because she said if they really wanted me to visit, they'd buy me a new car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Heather, are you there?
Yes, I did not hear that. You were going to get me in trouble.
I figured I'd give it a shot. Come on, what if it worked?
We had him on the ropes, Heather. We had him on the ropes. He was ready to agree to a new Corolla.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so she can't make it. I mean, you can tell your father yourself, Heather. Your car isn't gonna make it.
And apparently, it's not.
So what are we gonna do here? I mean, what's the deal? I mean, how are you gonna get home?
How are we gonna resolve this?
You could buy me a plane ticket.
Who?
You talking to us or Dad?
Yeah. You.
Us? Get lost.
That works for me.
You maniacs are all alike. Well, Robert, I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, she wants to come home. You can't go there. She can't come. I'm halfway. This is the classic meeting halfway.
Minnesota.
I was thinking more along the lines of Portland.
Portland? Portland's only 30 minutes from you.
Yeah. There you go.
4 days from me. I think my parents would really like Washington.
I think they would, too. But yeah. Dad can't go until after hunting season.
Oh, dear.
All right. You get the ticket. We're gonna kick in $50.
Okay.
All right. Nice talking to you, Robert.
Thank you.
Have a good hunting season.
Hey, it's going to be a busy one.
I'm sure. See you, Heather.
Thank you.
Good luck, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, they're a lot of fun. Portland, huh?
Portland to Portland. Oh, that's Oregon, isn't it?
Yeah, he wasn't thinking of Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Got to be after the hunting season.
We'll keep everyone informed as far as... Heather's progress.
So he was willing to go as far as Portland, which she says is 30 minutes away from where he lives.
It's a humble beginning.
Well, maybe if you live in Maine, that is your idea of meeting someone halfway.
It may be. Maine's a big state, you know.
Yeah.
All right, Tommy, look, it's time for us to take a little break.
Oh, thank God. I've been waiting minutes for this break.
I call the couch.
We'll be back in a minute. We was up on a box. Sounds crazy. I swear it's true. I seen it in the papers, and that's just the sort of cool thing New York would do. My, hey, And even though Magliozzi's everywhere think to themselves, you know, Smith has a nice ring to it whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the no-no Puzzler. The Puzzler is taking its annual summer hiatus, and we know that while most of you are saying, thank God, there are a few misfits out there who can't seem to go a week without a Car Talk Puzzler, and for them, we have what?
Shock therapy!
And our weekly archival puzzler at our website, cartalk.com. So if you need a puzzle, go there. In the meantime, if you'd like to call us about anything, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Matt from Chicago, and it's an honor to be on your show.
Hi, Matt.
It's an honor to have you, Matt.
What's going on, man?
Okay, about 2 months ago, I purchased a 2001 Mazda Protege, and I actually got a $5,000 discount because there's about 20 to 25 golf ball size dents in it caused by hail damage when it was getting delivered to Chicago.
Really?
But first I gave my mechanic a call, and he told me the dents shouldn't be a problem as long as the paint and the weather steel is still intact.
Yeah, and is it?
It is, yeah. I didn't see any scratches. I also gave a call to my girlfriend, and I made sure she's not going to leave me if I came driving in with a car full of dents.
How many dents does it have?
Hundreds.
Probably about 20 to 25, and they're
on
the hood, on the side, on the trunk.
Really?
And so, you know, I also live in Chicago, and kids are going to throw rocks at my car anyway, and people ding up your car when they're driving.
Well, especially now they're going to. I mean, it's obvious. It's an obvious target.
Well, it looks like there's a contest going on. Everybody wants to be part of it.
Exactly. I have the most dents.
Yeah, so what's your question, Matt?
Okay. It's not the most important thing to fix the dents. I've had it for a couple months. I like it. But I was going to try to maybe see what I can do to get some of the most high-profile dents off without having to spend a lot of money on taking it to the body shop because it's just not worth it. My friend Bob at the office said way back in the day, around 1988, he was in Killeen, Texas, and he had a bunch of Army buddies that fixed dents by applying dried ice.
Oh, he was at Fort Hood.
I guess he was there. I guess he never told me that. And apparently you apply the dry ice to the dent, and the temperature of the ice maybe pops the dent out. I'm a little bit skeptical, so I thought I'd call you guys up and see if you've ever heard of that.
Sounds great to me. Dry ice,
yeah.
Huh?
Well, I've heard of it. See, that's the sort of thing you would do in Texas.
Especially if you get the dry ice off the base.
Yeah. No, but it's the kind of thing you would do if you weren't really worried about the paint job. Because it might work, and I don't really have any firsthand knowledge of whether it works or not. But there is another technology that is going around and has been going around for the last few years. And I'm not really sure how it works, but there are guys, and there's a company with the name that I can't remember. Who are those guys?
Dougie's going to remember. It's called the Dent Gypsies or something. But it is, but no, but there are guys who come around in trucks.
Yeah, and they have some.
And they don't have the dogs and the violins and all that, you know,
no.
But they do have tools.
But they do have
tools.
Plumbers helpers.
No, they do. They do massage the dents out, and they try to fix the dent without stretching the metal. Because if you stretch the metal,
you crack the paint.
Either you crack the paint or you make, instead of a dent, you make the thing protrude in the other direction.
That's
yeah, and that's the danger with the dry ice technique, that you have really no control over it.
No, I'm sure there's somebody in your area, probably a lot of people in your area, that can try to fix this. But my guess is they may be able to fix some of the smaller ones, but the big ones are not going to be easily fixed.
Okay.
Don't forget, the reason there's a dent there, in all likelihood, and it's a big enough dent that it's, you know, didn't occur to the dealer they could fix it easily, and they'd probably have to replace the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the roof was a problem.
I mean, yeah.
They could have replaced everything else, the fenders, the trunk
lid. Well, the roof
lid.
Can replace, too. You cut the roof off, you weld a new one on, but it's a big
deal.
But
that would cost $5,000. Oh, that's what they gave them.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to take the headliner out. You've got to cut the roof on, weld a new one on, then you've got to put put a headliner in, and you got to prime it.
I think
it and
a roof
it.
Rack will take care of that.
Ooh, how about,
okay.
How
the
about
sand.
A vinyl roof? you fill up the low spots, so to speak.
Sure.
Right?
Look around on the web. Go to our website.
And if somebody says dry ice, I can say forget
if
it.
If someone says, have you ever heard about dry ice, find out what they know.
Here's what you do. You go to a junkyard, and you make a dent in a junk car with a golf ball or some such
and
thing.
You experiment with
and
the
then
dry
you,
ice.
You try the dry ice. Does that sound like a good idea?
All right.
Rather than experiment on your car, I mean, if it
why
takes...
Why go all the way to the junkyard? There's probably a car parked on the street right now.
Good luck, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's true.
I mean, I have an evil mind. And I know I do, and there's nothing I can do.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello. You're on Car Talk.
Hi, you guys. My name's Alexandra, and I'm calling from Vermont.
Hi, Alexandra.
Alexandra, where in Vermont?
Well, it's a tiny town of about 300 people named Tynemouth, just south of Rutland, if you know that sort of southern Vermont area.
Do I know Rutland? Are you kidding? I know Rutland like the back of my hand.
Really?
Never been there.
Yes.
So were you in a phone booth or something?
I am. I'm sorry about the background noise.
That's all right.
It's all right. What's going on?
Well, I have a 1996 Honda Civic, which has been wonderful until recently. It's still operating okay, but I took a cross-country trip from San Francisco to Vermont in June, and my air conditioning, when I'm idling, starts to make funny noises. I think it's the air conditioning because that's the only time I ever hear it. The car tends to make this sort of intermittent ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk noise, and then it stops. And then a couple minutes later, it'll start again.
Yeah.
And I had never heard it until I took my trip.
Mm-hmm. Does the air conditioner seem to work okay, or is it a little bit less cool?
No, it seems to work fine. But, you know, Vermont isn't the hottest place in the summer.
Right. So you wouldn't know necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I do use it, and it seems to work fine, which is what really puzzles me.
Well, I think what's happening is you're hearing the air conditioner compressor clutch kicking in and out. See, the compressor has a clutch on it because there's a belt that drives the compressor.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be able to have the belt turn the compressor pulley without actually turning the whole compressor unless you want the air conditioner on. So the vast majority of time that you're driving the car and the AC is off, the compressor pulley is turning, but the whole guts of the compressor aren't. Until you turn the switch on, this electric clutch engages. So that now, as the belt turns, it's turning the guts of the compressor and compressing the refrigerant so that you can be cool inside.
Okay.
And what I think you're hearing is either you have a bad clutch.
Or a soon-to-be bad clutch.
Or a bad compressor. But I'm going to guess you have a bad compressor clutch.
Hmm.
Where are you now?
Vermont.
She's in a phone booth. She's just told you.
I'm on Main Street America.
She's on Main Street America.
Well, you can, in fact, I mean, this should be fairly easy to verify. You should take it to some repair shop or even a gas station and run the engine and have the guy look at the compressor. You can hear this happen probably within a few minutes of starting the car, I would imagine.
With the air conditioning on, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
And he'll be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll say, oh, yeah, geez, it looks like your compressor clutch is falling off or there's something broken here.
Or it's not engaging or some such thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So I definitely wanted to have your opinion before taking it to a mechanic so I don't walk away spending $1,000 when it's... How much do you think it should cost to
repair? About $1,000. No, if it's only the clutch...
It should be a few a few hundred bucks.
It's not going to be much.
Okay.
Good luck.
Well, thank you so much for your help.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Richard in Dogtown, California.
Dogtown?
Dogtown, California, yes.
Why is it called Dogtown?
It's kind of an old-fashioned term for a junky area outside of a mining camp or a lumber camp.
No kidding.
Where there were cheap booze and hookers, and it all fell apart when the mine ran.
Are you having a lot of fun?
So what's cooking?
Well, let's see. I raise goats.
Uh-huh.
As you may know, goats like to jump up on things.
Yes.
Box, and they get up on my car, and they've pretty well trashed it over the last few years. And when friends come to visit, I have to put the hoods up on their cars and the trunk lids up to keep the goats from getting on their cars.
Ah.
So what I want to do is hook up a fence charger to my car and give the goats a small shock so they won't jump up on the car. And I'm wondering if that's going to mess with the car's electrical system in any way.
Yeah, it will mess with the car's electrical system. On modern cars, I think that you would void the warranty.
Well, well.
Ah!
Well.
Ah!
Wait a minute. I'm working on it.
I think you're inviting disaster.
Yeah, I could do it either with a fence charger that runs on 110 volts or one that runs off 12 volts and then kind of install one permanently in my car.
Yeah, but it's not coursing through. In other words, you want it such that if a goat were to touch any part of the body,
yes,
he'd get a shock.
That's correct.
Yeah, see, that ain't gonna be easy. I don't think you're going to be able to do that.
Well, how do those things work?
Well, a fence charger has one output wire.
Yeah.
You just hook that terminal to an ungrounded...
goat.
Ungrounded goat. I mean, you could put it in the city, you know, and then people, when you park your car, no one's going to steal it either. But it just attaches to a wire that runs along the top of a fence for miles.
Yeah.
And anybody that touches that gets a light shock and stops touching it.
Oh, so they don't really jump up onto the car. They
usually put their front feet up.
They
first
put their front feet up, and that's when they would get zapped.
Yeah.
Does anyone actually come and visit you?
Not anymore.
Well, fewer and fewer.
He's lonely. That's why he's trying to do. I'm so lonely.
I mean, can't you put the goats in a pen?
Well, I can, but they run free.
How about you make a pen for the cars? Right? So that the goats can't get
that
in there.
But I like Richard's idea of conditioning the goats. How many goats have you got?
Well, right now, just three. We had 20 of them.
Oh, you could...
I mean, is this goat thing a hobby or what? is this a business?
It's a hobby.
It's a hobby.
Is it animal husbandry? No, I mean, here's what I'm thinking. I agree with my brother. You go throwing 110 volts on the body of the car, that's going to raise...
Oh, no, ultimately thousands.
Ultimately, thousands. That's
oh,
right.
No.
That's going to raise havoc, as we say.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you couldn't build yourself just a little thing. You know, when you walk into the movie theater and they got those little stands there with the little velvety rope that you...
Oh,
know,
yeah, I'm sure the goats will observe that.
What you do is you put a few of those around the car, and you run the wire around those things. Now the goat, in order to get to the car, they're going to get zapped. And it's not going to take very many days before they associate the car and the zapping. And I think once we condition them, hopefully they'll remember that if a blue car comes in, that it's going to be like a red car. And they won't be able to distinguish. And they'll say, oh, no, the other one was red.
We can jump on this one. This is Richard's car.
Oh, this is that's not Richard's car. That's no good rat.
Shock us, will you? Yeah.
See, that's what I like. But on the other hand, if it's only three goats.
Well, you should see, you can imagine what a goat. Doris's car, which is an old Alfa Romeo with a soft top's got.
Yeah.
Goats get up there, get on the top of her car, and just put their foot right through it. So.
Sure. And Doris doesn't come back anymore, does she? And you're lonely, aren't you?
That's the real reason I want to do this.
Maybe you can meet Doris like Motel 6.
Oh, Richard. No, I mean, I'm thinking, why can't you just, like, put a collar on them like a dog and just tie them up?
They don't like to be tied up.
No, I want to let them... We've got lots of animals running free around here, and I like it that way.
And you don't mind hitting them with 140,000 volts as much as you love them. It's like shock therapy.
It is.
Yeah.
I think you're doing the right thing.
Well, I think the simplest solution would be a pen that you could drive the car into that the goats wouldn't jump the fence off.
I was trying to avoid them.
I know,
he
but
was
I
was trying to avoid.
I know,
that.
And you're trying
he
to.
He wanted to. He's dying to zap them with 120,000 volts. That's what he really wants to do. Hey, Richard, I wish you the best.
Thank you.
But I would try that. I think you can do it if you put something around the car and you just let them get zapped a couple of times. And I mean, if you had to, you could put this same thing around Doris is coming.
You want to give us Doris's number? But we... Richard, I don't know if we've helped you at all, but it's been a hell of a lot of fun talking to you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, build a pen and call Doris and apologize. See you later.
Bye-bye.
I keep thinking about the Don Rickles bit. Where he's a French general, and he's going around kissing on the two cheeks, and he turns around and he says, I gotta get a broad.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered an otherwise perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our production assistant is Aaron Wax. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Harvard Lawn, Grey Poupon, Ice Bonbon, Lawn of Fawn, Fried Wonton, Buttered Drawn Garlic Prawn, and Steamed Udon Early Dawn Munchathon is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our motivational speaker is Boris Oxoff. Our director of staff bonuses is Ray Vaughn. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the squirrels taking GRE review classes in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And please don't drive like my brother.
And please don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 932, dig into the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division for Car Talk gifts at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, the Car Talk Guide to Doing It Yourself, including tips on dozens of repairs, and our four basic do-it-yourself goals.
Goal number one, fix the thing that's broken.
Goal number two, try not to break anything that wasn't broken before.
Goal number three, don't blow anything up.
And goal number four, try to finish with the same number of arms, legs, digits, and eyebrows that you came in with.
That's the tough one, those eyebrows, yeah.
Especially the eyebrows. Check out the entire DIY area all this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR security closes off the stairway to the roof whenever we say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.